Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... This was supposed to be a post-election podcast, listener, but it turns out, rather predictably, I have to say, to be a mid-election episode. So in the spirit of the day, we're here slightly prematurely, but there's still plenty to discuss, even at this early stage. Joining me to discuss the interim outcome and any possible early takeaways from this US presidential election, we've got Noah Landau, Aluf Ben, and Anshul Pfeffer. Hi, guys.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, Simon.
So, did anybody else have a flashback to March the 4th, exactly 8 months ago, when the headline here was Netanyahu accuses Gantz of trying to steal the election? I think that was when my PTSD really started to set in. Am I alone in that?
No. Of course we all thought about, you know, Netanyahu's declarations. But, you know, back then he focused on the Arab votes, you know, and called them fraudulent. This time, Trump has a different enemy. Of course, it's a different place, a different enemy. But it's the same tactic overall.
But a different outcome, because in America you cannot have Biden join Trump as the
alternative president. So this is the nightmare scenario, right? Irrespective of who wins, and let's stress that the time of recording, we do not know. Whoever wins, the damage has already been done, right? With Trump's false claim of victory and the call to stop the counting.
Well, the damage has been done to American democracy. You could argue that the damage is in progress already for the last 4 years. And I think the damage has been done in a large way to the Democratic Party, because we're speaking now, we don't know who's going to win it. We may not know for another couple of days, perhaps even longer if it goes to the courts. But they've become the victim of their own expectations of the the polls were obviously inflated towards them, and there was a lot of talk of a possible landslide, which obviously is now just talk. And I think there was an expectation that if Trump would lose badly, the Republican Party would go into sort of a period of soul searching. Perhaps there would be a purge of the Trumpists and so on. Even if Trump fails to win now, it's clear that's not going to happen. Trump still owns the Republican Party, and even if he loses, his spirit will be there for a long time yet. He's proven today or last night that he can still keep that coalition together. Even if he loses, 46-47% of American voters will have voted for him. They've made inroads in minority groups like the Latinos and black voters, which wasn't expected to happen. So there's an argument for the people who support him that his way is still the best way for the Republican Party. And we certainly won't see a purge there happening. On the other hand, I think we will see a lot of soul-searching and perhaps even a lot of infighting, even if Biden wins within the Democratic Party, because you're already hearing these people saying, oh, if only Bernie was the candidate, or Elizabeth Warren, then there would have been something more exciting, and they would have been, you know, they would have done better. And I think that the center-left in many countries still isn't quite clear on how to face what we're seeing now around the world, the populist wave of governments. Is the best way to fight them, is it through a centrist, more moderate, sort of, you know, hewing to the center ground? Is that the way to fight right-wing populism? Or should there be a left-wing populism, a more radical, revolutionary change vision, which, you know, should that be the best way to confront right-wing populism? And what we're seeing here in this election, that there isn't a clear answer.
And the centrists have failed now twice, it appears, assuming that Trump wins, that centrists have now failed twice to beat him.
But
right?
For other countries, you could argue that also the more radical left-wingers don't really have a way of confronting it. We saw what happened in Britain just 11 months ago, where certainly a revolutionary-minded Labour Party was wiped out by a populist Conservative Party. So there isn't a clear answer what's the best way to confront populism.
Alouf, is there any chance that, that Trump's gambit can work? Is American democracy strong enough to withstand what some are already calling an attempted coup?
Well, if he appeals to court, and you know, that's a proper way of doing that. I mean, appealing against the
but he's
the voting
called for
system
the...
is not something that was invented by Trump in this election. It happened before. It happened to Bush versus Gore, and he won 20 years ago. And it can happen again. The fear for democracy was not of if Trump appeals to court and wins the case, or let alone if he loses the case and becomes the ex-president, but that he would solidify, you know, hide it within the White House, send his militias to the streets to shoot people or whatever. But
was tonight's speech where he declared victory, was that the first step towards that?
Well, I cannot say. I don't know.
There wasn't much condemnation within the Republican Party.
The Republican Party, just like the Likud Party in Israel today with Netanyahu, is a one-man show. Although, according to long-held beliefs and policies of that party, it's not as if Trump turned the Republican Party into something else. He turned it into an extreme version of itself.
But Fox News and Ben Shapiro did criticize it. I mean, there is a voice within, you know, hardcore Trump supporters against his speech.
A very small, quiet voice, let's be honest.
I don't know if Fox News and Ben Shapiro are not, you know, quiet, you know, personas. So.
What are your initial thoughts after whatever percentage of the vote is being counted, and we're still waiting for six key states?
Well, when you see that map with, you know, all the red and blue, the first thing that comes to mind is that even if Trump actually lost, he won. Because the fact that after 4 years of, you know, Trumpism, you know, that extent of people actually voted for him again shows that whatever he did already won. And that even if he's not going to win again, there will be a different Trump that will win again, because those people are not going anywhere. And that's something I think that America and also other countries, you know, facing these kinds of trends haven't really, and Israel as well, we didn't really fully understand what it means that these people are not going anywhere. The fact that, you know, the race is that close, and that this or that candidate won, will not make all the voters disappear.
And more people voted this time for Trump than last time, even after four years of seeing him.
But it told a different story. I think to me, I paid less attention to polls, because polls in Israel and the United States, I don't know elsewhere, but in Israel and the United States, the polls always tilt to the left. 5-10% always tilt to the left, in my experience. But I think that the main difference was that Trump campaigned twice, 4 years ago and in this campaign, with a strong message. 4 years ago, it was isolationism, closing the borders to foreign trade, closing the borders to new immigrants, kicking out illegal immigrants, and so on and so forth. And the argument was that foreigners are coming to eat your lunch. And that resonated with a certain kind of voters who voted for him, despite his grab them video and other remarks that were not politically correct even then. 4 years later, it changed the tone. And basically what it was telling people was that consistently for 4 years, political incorrectness is good, is right. You should be able to say whatever you want against people, weaker people, people from different gender, from different ethnic groups, etc., etc. And portraying the left as a bunch of people who are only worried about PC and about what you're allowed to say and not to say. And there are many people who love that message. And many people who love the message of what we call the combination of the Bible and Ayn Rand, that the strong are there to win, and that if someone like Trump can be the president, so can you. And with the other side, I don't know what the Clinton message was. I'm not sure that she knew when she ran against Trump. And I'm not sure what the Biden message is, other than only not Trump. And again, and we know it from Israel, that only not Bibi is not enough, because it builds a coalition that is very weak.
Excuse me, but you're talking as if Trump has already won. I mean, he
hasn't
won.
No, he hasn't won. But remember,
if he wins the Electoral College, he will probably lose the popular vote. So it's still,
you're right,
it's
still
not clear that there is a majority for Trump.
But there's not a majority for Trump. But let me remind you that most commentary that was published here and elsewhere before the election was that it was supposed to be a landslide for Biden, especially after the visible failure of Trump to deal with the coronavirus epidemic. This is not just about what he was saying then, and did he fulfill his electoral pledges to build a wall on the border with Mexico, which he didn't, etc., etc. It was about the coronavirus, and that was a dismal failure, and despite that, more people voted for Trump than 4 years ago.
So how did he convince people that he's done a good job with the coronavirus? If it weren't for the coronavirus, Trump would have won by a landslide, presumably.
I'm not sure.
I don't think he did. I don't think that was what people voted about. In the end, it's a question, more and more, we see that it's a question of identities. We see that you have, in Israel as well again, you have two sides of the identity coin, fighting each other, and it's not about the issues. It's about who we are.
But it's interesting that Biden refused to be dragged into those identity or culture wars. I mean, Trump was basically fighting that on his own on an open battlefield, and there were certainly people within the Democratic coalition, on the progressive wing certainly, who did want to have that kind of fight against Trump. Biden decided... And, you know, until 24 hours ago, people were saying wisely he decided not to be dragged into those culture wars. Whether or not it was indeed a wise thing, we'll know.
He might still win.
Exactly. If Biden does enter the White House
clearly
in January...
clearly it's not going to be a swiping Democratic takeover of the White House and the Senate.
Definitely not.
This is not going to happen. And it does something about the electorate. Even if, as we know, once you're elected in America... Only the winner votes count. Bush barely won the election 20 years ago, and it was enough for him to change the world, launch two enormous wars in the Middle East, etc., etc. So it doesn't really matter for the post-election. So we can only comment about what it tells us about the feelings among the American voters. Even if Biden wins, it's still a house divided, deeply divided, with very little common agreement between red and blue states, red and blue counties, red and blue voters. According to one analysis I saw in the New York Times, people who cared more about the coronavirus were against Trump, and those who cared more about the economy trust more in Trump than in Biden. But I think it's all about image and identity. We have no idea what Biden would do or could do if he's elected to fix the economy, to fix the coronavirus. Clearly, from our standpoint, Biden represents a party and an idea of a more interventionist America, America that is the center in several global and in our case regional alliances. With Trump, more isolationist and trying to undermine these alliances and reach out to the adversaries directly, with Putin, in a different way with the Chinese. With North Koreans, perhaps he pledged that after the election, if he's reelected, he would make a deal with Iran. That's what he told Netanyahu. And Biden is expected to rebuild a global coalition against global warming, against climate change, to rebuild a Western agreement vis-a-vis Iran, to rebuild some of the older alliances of America and the Middle East, to be more open to the Palestinian question. To the extent that anybody in America could care about that at this point. But we see that even in the midst of the coronavirus, Trump spent the time and political energy to sell these aircraft to the UAE and in return get them to sign a peace deal with Israel.
Mm. Do we think that helped him in this election campaign? Or is this just marginal and only interesting readers of Haaretz?
I don't think that was, you know, what people thought of when they went and voted in America yesterday. That's not, you know, top priority.
Not even the Jewish voters, according to exit polls, who backed Biden by 77% to 20-something percent.
Maybe the Israeli voters.
The more relevant constituency here are the Texas voters who work for Lockheed Martin,
those
aircraft.
The F-35.
The F-35 constituency.
That's also a drop in the ocean.
Keeps thousands of families well-paid in Texas. So.
It's a way of demanding the Emiratis to pay for some of their American security guarantees through buying these aircraft.
We often look at global affairs and international affairs and ask the question, is it good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? I think in this case it depends on which Jews we're talking about, right? I mean, the fact that Americans have not taken this opportunity to firmly reject a president who courts neo-Nazis and dog whistles to anti-Semites,
this is a
strong message to American Jews.
But it's a house divided between Israeli Jews and American Jews, whereas
absolutely.
Israeli Jews who don't vote in America, but according to each and every opinion poll in the past 4 years overwhelmingly support Trump and see him as a great friend of Israel.
But didn't support
the same,
him 4 years ago, incidentally, right?
Well, they didn't know him then. But recently it's clear like 70-80% support for Trump, which is the mirror image or the flip image of the 70-80% Jewish American support to the Democrats, to Biden in this case and Clinton before that. So we see a house divided in the between the Jews in America and Israel as well.
Even more so than before. And in the meantime, a Jewish cemetery in Michigan was vandalized with pro-Trump graffiti this week, a harbinger perhaps of what's to come.
According to at least one exit poll I saw, the American Jews 21% voted for Trump, which is the lowest. If it's true, and I'm sure that that data is still being worked upon, but at least according to one exit poll, 21% is the lowest in 20 years that any Republican has received. The last time that it was that low was 20% for Bush Sr. when he lost to Clinton. So, you know, with the exception of, as we know, the Orthodox community who voted for Trump, it would seem that at least some Jews who would normally be at least open to voting for the Republicans did not vote for Trump this time around.
But it's actually part of the same story of identity elsewhere. I don't think it's unique for the Jews, because what we're actually seeing here is that the Jewish community in America and in Israel is divided between values, you know, liberal values and less liberal values. That's in the end the same division that we see elsewhere on identity issues. So American Jews, you know, they're clearly more on the liberal side of Jewish history, when the Jews in Israel are more conservative. So it's actually the same division.
Except now American Jews know that 65 million or so of their compatriots have voted for, as we said, somebody who believes that Jews have divided loyalties.
Well, look, here Israelis Israelis understand less the issues facing Jews in the diaspora. And to them, as long as the IDF could fight as needed without outside interference, as long as the Palestinians are not courted by the Americans, and especially when the Israeli passport and the Israeli flag are more welcome around the world, that's enough. And the issues of vandalizing Jewish cemeteries in Michigan or in Paris or a synagogue in Vienna, you know, people here care less about that because deep in their heart, and sometimes not so deep, they say, well, if these people wanted to be safe and secure, they could come to Israel. We're always open to them.
I was wondering whether it would be too cynical to ask whether there would be a call up for American Jews now to immigrate to Israel.
Well, you know, we expected the million liberals coming to save Israel from itself after the first Trump victory. We were expecting hundreds of thousands of American Jews escaping to the coronavirus to Israel with his public health care system. Well, it didn't happen, and I'm not sure it's going to happen again. Most of those people who voted against Trump would stay in the United States even if he wins, and if Biden wins, they would be on the winning side again.
Mm. So, Nah, what's going on in Jerusalem right now?
In Jerusalem, in a specific house.
Well, one specific house, say on Balfour Street, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't really believe this, this trend that everyone says that Netanyahu only wants Trump to win. And we spoke about it, in a recent podcast. Mm-hmm. Biden is, even more comfortable for Netanyahu, because Netanyahu comes from the old liberal in the classic sense of, understanding American politics. He knows Biden for a long time. He's more of a classic AIPAC person. He knows how to handle Biden, which wasn't the case with Trump. Trump was unexpected, someone that, made him really uncomfortable in some events. And I'm not sure. I think that deep in his heart, of course, from a personality point of view, Biden is much more comfortable. But politically, he aligned himself with Trump in a way that if now Trump loses, this puts him also in a political problem at home here in Israel. Mm. So he kind of, he made his own bed in that sense, that, he allied himself so much politically with Trump that now if he loses, that's, also will look a little badly for him. But I'm sure he would, he will be able to spin that and show that actually he could work with Biden, etc. I mean, the big issue that could, turn into a problem is, of course, Iran. So that's the main issue. Regarding, like Aluf says, the Palestinian issues will definitely not be the first one on Biden's list. So I don't think that would be the first controversy.
Mm. So,
I think that some of those diplomatic gestures that Trump had given to Netanyahu, like moving the embassy to Jerusalem, mm-hmm. recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the Golan, etc., we're not going to see more or being open to the idea of annexation in the West Bank, which was taken off the table eventually. Biden is not going to be open to these kinds of gestures. And I guess that other countries that are now standing in line to move, some third world countries are standing in line to at least announce moving their embassy to Jerusalem, mm-hmm. I think they're going to be stopped on their tracks.
Did you notice that they're all promising that they will move their embassy
next year? Yeah.
They're all saying, we'll say something nice now, but let's see who wins.
And I think it's true of Oman and Morocco, countries which may be joining the peace train with Israel. After UAE, Sudan, and Bahrain, I think now we'll see a period in which people will wait and see, assuming Biden wins, what his policy is. But I think Noah made a very important point that for Netanyahu, his issues with whoever will be in the White House from January onwards are very different, whether it's a domestic political issue. And in this case, part of Netanyahu's aura of invincibility in the last 4 years is very much linked to Trump. If Trump wins, it's good for Netanyahu in Israel, because it will sort of show, Bibi always likes calling himself, or his fans like to call him, the magician. It'll be the same kind of thing that Trump...
Against the odds, against the polls, against the left, against the media.
Against the establishment.
And vindication of the political style, the Trump example to many leaders around the world, including Netanyahu and his supporters, being very combative and fighting the enemy and not giving away an inch and using politically incorrect language. In Israel's case, it's Netanyahu's son, but it's the same Balfour Street operation. If Trump leaves the White House, we're gonna definitely see a change of style.
Yeah, and
political discourse.
So Bibi's aura of invincibility will be damaged if indeed Trump loses. Mm. But on the other hand, a second term Trump is a very problematic thing for Netanyahu, because a second term Trump doesn't need the evangelicals anymore, doesn't need Sheldon Adelson and other donors. It's Trump unbound. Now, Trump unbound could suddenly fly to Tehran and make a new deal with Iranians.
And he said that before the election.
Mm-hmm. And Biden is at least predictable. He's not as friendly as Trump, he never will be as friendly as Trump. there is still some bad blood from the Obama years. Biden remembers coming to Israel and being surprised by sudden announcements and building settlements. But still, Biden is a known quantity. He's not hostile. Neither is Kamala Harris. They're people that Bibi can do business with, and they play by the book. But Trump, a second-term Trump unbound, as Noah said, is something really almost frightening for Netanyahu. And I think that he'll find a way to balance the domestic damage with the diplomatic reliability of a Biden administration.
And I would watch, as always, for transition period surprises that always happen when there's a change of guard at the White House. Mm. 4 years ago, we had Obama signing the security package with Israel, $38 billion for 10 years, and at the same time abstaining at the Security Council from a very strongly worded by Security Council standards against the settlements, against annexation, against Israeli occupation in the West Bank. This could come back to the table with Biden. And when with Trump in a transition period, if Biden wins eventually, expect some surprise, some diplomatic or security surprise.
But in the end, the settlement enterprise survived that and this. I mean, in the end, that reality on the ground always continues.
It survived eight years of Obama.
Exactly, it doesn't even matter. I mean, they're stronger. The action on the ground is stronger than anything else, including who sits in the White House.
Mm. And presumably that's why the settlers were out praying yesterday in Hebron for a Trump victory, right? Anshul, you wrote about Bibi's possible narrative for a Biden presidency. Does he have a similar narrative prepared for, if it's at all possible, to prepare for second-term Trump?
It'll be much more difficult, because with Biden and with the Democrats, he can do what he did to Obama and say, look, they're hostile to us, and therefore you need me to stand up to a hostile White House. And that's been his message about Obama during the Obama term, and certainly in the last 4 years. He said, he said it over and over again in his election speeches in 2019, 2020. I'd like to have seen Benny Gantz standing up to Obama for 8 years. That's been Bibi's narrative, and he'll go back to use it. He'll use it in a different way.
They already started in Israel. Yes, only Bibi could stand up to Biden.
But it's not to Biden, because Biden is not Barack Obama.
Biden is
weak. He's being manipulated by the anti-Semitic progressive, etc., etc. So Netanyahu's already putting that narrative in place. But you're right. It'd be very, very difficult for him to build a narrative against Trump, because if Trump does fly off to Tehran and the Iranians wine and dine him, well, not wine, but dine. Also, he didn't drink alcohol either. But the Iranians like wow him, and he signs some kind of new JCPOA 2.0, which Netanyahu doesn't like. It'll be very difficult for Netanyahu to build a counter narrative. Maybe Noah's got an idea of what it would be.
You can see it on a much smaller scale around the F-35. It was very difficult for Netanyahu, even though he wasn't happy about it. He couldn't stop it.
No.
Maybe Bibi will strike quickly and use a Trump victory which might give him extra support to force a new election here?
Well, he doesn't have a narrative for another reason, because, as Aleph said, everyone was talking about there being a landslide. Netanyahu is a big believer in polling. One of Trump's pollsters, McLaughlin, is also Netanyahu's pollster. And McLaughlin was one of the people telling Trump stuff that Trump didn't want to hear. So McLaughlin, even though he's a Republican, was at least part of this pollster's consensus that Biden is a sure thing. So Netanyahu, from what I've heard, in recent weeks has been pretty certain that Biden's going to win. So he hasn't prepared that narrative yet. Mm. Maybe he's preparing one as we speak, but also he's waiting, and I'm sure like everyone else, he's refreshing his browser every... Well, not himself, because he's a technophobe, but he's got a guy there refreshing the results every minute.
Yair is doing that. At least he's not barred from Twitter yet. But no, I think that when Trump tried to drag Bibi into his campaign by saying Sleepy Joe wouldn't have given you that deal
with Sudan,
Netanyahu shied away from that.
You could see there that Netanyahu was already dealing himself.
If Trump wins, is he going to punish Bibi for that?
No,
No, I don't think so. But you know, Simon, I think that Netanyahu's biggest problem, if Trump loses, is actually something deeper than his relationship with him or what it means for his policy in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest problem would be that Trump allowed this, you know, distrust in American institution, which Netanyahu really needs now in his fight against the court. I mean, his main campaign for survival right now is distrust against the courts. And Trump's presidency gave green light to those kind of statements and behavior, which without Trump in, you know, this story, it would be much more difficult for Netanyahu to continue. And I would bet that this is one of his, you know, biggest problems right now.
Mm. Even if the Supreme Court in the States eventually sides with Trump, which would be ironic that the institution that he's denigrating.
It's not quite clear what Trump wants to appeal against. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the Al Gore-Bush case, which, you know, it was very clear what they're trying to argue about, a specific, you know,
There are no hanging chads this time.
But he's just saying, you know, they stole the elections without even, you know, explaining what is the...
But he's not the lawyer preparing the case for court.
But actually, ironically, Trump going to the Supreme Court and asking the Supreme Court to intervene in an election is exactly the opposite of Netanyahu's message. Netanyahu's message has been for years now, the legal establishment won't decide, the people must decide.
These are nuances for journalists. The thing is that the establishment kind of organized anarchy from the White House or from Balfour Street.
The deep state concept that the organs of the state...
apart from the prime minister or the president, in the American case, are all corrupt, hostile, and go against the will of the people, which is to have the populist leader with as much power as possible, with no limits. The fact that even Likud occasionally appeals to the Supreme Court in Israel against this or that organ doesn't matter, because, you know, this is the court that they have. But Trump did a much better job than the Israeli right wing. In this case, it was not so much Netanyahu, but Ayelet Shaked as Minister of Justice in the previous cabinet, to build a more conservative court. Mm. And now the conservatives in America have a clear majority in the court for many, many years to come, which is, I think, whatever happens to Trump, this is a very long-lasting legacy on his part in American institutions.
Mm.
By the way, Aluf, I was thinking, okay, we're always comparing Netanyahu to Trump. Who would you compare in Israeli politics to Biden?
Gantz. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Not really.
For me, it's Gantz.
No, but Biden's been in politics for so many years.
Gantz is
a newcomer.
But he's the boring guy who was sent to look like an establishment person against the more populist leader. He's the one, you know, he's the one that's not that exciting for people to vote for.
Yeah, but Biden is a professional politician. Gantz knows nothing about politics.
They share the lack of charisma and the lack of idea or ideology or some sort of you know, you see them and you don't see a fighter. When you see Trump,
that's what I thought. That's what I thought. I thought Biden is Bushy Herzog, because Bushy is a professional politician, knows politics.
Biden is more like
Bushy.
Bins
for so many, but no, like you say, charisma, and he's not a fighter.
And not a left-wing radical.
Yeah.
In that sense, yeah.
And look, even the election results are very similar. It's the same
Tzipi
thing
Livni,
we had with Bibi and
I think Tzipi Livni is much more courageous, because she also moved from the right to the left. Whereas
I'm talking about
Biden and Bushy. People have always been in the same sort of centrist.
Yeah, but the parties themselves in America, you make these changes mostly within your party. Yeah, not switching parties. It's not that common in American politics, and it gets you nowhere. You cannot be a presidential candidate if you switch parties.
Mm. Who's the Nate Silver in the Israeli scenario then? Guys, I'm getting Ben Twitter withdrawal symptoms. Guys, I don't know about you, but I'm starting to get Twitter withdrawal symptoms. I need to log back on and see what's going on with the counting. My thanks to Aluf Ben, to Noah Landau, and to Anshul Pfeffer, and of course to producer Aaron Ehrlich. We'll be back on Sunday with another episode, hopefully with the results. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.